Ah, yes, the magnificent Trolley Sour Bright Crawler, also known as Trollicus brightolus. The worm's captivating neon colour makes it an easy, gummy prey.
Trolley!
It's a surprisingly sour, invitingly chewy, staggeringly snackable species unlike anything else found on this planet.
Eat me!
Delicious. Visit Trolley.com to shop now.
Trolley, eat me!
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Coming up on today's episode, we look back at the Jets' bounce back against the Wild, plus Bones calls the boys out, and a quick look at the latest trade news across the league.
Hello, everybody. Hi. Recording live from somewhere.
What's good, and welcome to another episode of Skates and Plates on the Hockey Podcast Network. I'm your host, Brandon Rewicki. You can follow me on Twitter at Brandon_Rewicki or the podcast at Skates Plates Pod. All right, let's get right into it here. A little bit of a puberty moment in the intro there. That was cool. But excited to talk about the Jets getting back on track with that win against Minnesota and setting themselves up nicely for a pretty big few days ahead as they continue their mini sort of trek through the Central Division, the bottom of the Central Division as well. So some room for the Jets to catch up to Dallas and Colorado at the top of the division. We'll get into that game against Minnesota there. I mean, the main thing too as well is I think Bones has had enough. He's had enough of this. 25 games to go. Let's go, boys. So we'll get into that as well. To do so with me once again, CJOB's Tyson Rewicki here. Tyson, how are we doing tonight?
Doing pretty good. The most underrated part about a long weekend is the week after, where it's a short week.
It's so good.
You don't even realize. It doesn't feel like a Friday, or will be a Friday, but by the time that this comes out. But man, there's just nothing beats the week after a long weekend. Besides a long weekend,
there's a lot of problems in this world, and I don't know if this would solve all of them, but I feel like it might. Imagine if every day was a 4-day work week.
Oh, it'd be awesome.
I just feel like the tension would... Everybody's so tight all the time and stressed, and like a 4-day work week. Like, it's just like, why can't we make that happen?
I'd even work 10 hours.
Oh, I mean, that's the obvious one. I have a buddy that has the option. It's like 4 10-hour days or just a 5-day work week. And it's like, this isn't even a decision here.
Exactly.
Well, we'll see. Maybe we can make it happen at some point. I mean,
Rewicki 2026.
There is zero chance I will ever run for any kind of office. Unironically, I should say. I want absolutely no part of that. The only thing I want to run for, or the platform I guess I would run on, is probably just to like rank the best snacks, the best snacking foods of all time. We just crushed a decently large bowl of what I think is the best snack food of all time. And that's just Ruffle chips and sour cream and onion dip.
It is. It's classic.
Like, it's not even Mount Rushmore. It's just like, how could anything ever possibly beat that?
Gold medal. It's so easy.
It's funny too, because I one time tried to make like a gourmet French onion dip. And so I spent like an hour caramelizing the onions. I bought brandy. I like deglazed the thing with brandy, I like zested lemons and like all this stuff. It took me so freaking long. And I finally tried it and I was like, this is marginally worse than the prepackaged like dust, the gray dust, like vacuum dust that you just throw in a thing of sour cream. It was so humiliating. Like, it was not humiliating. It was just like, what? Like, there's no point. Like, why even try to improve on perfection.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
That's
one that it's just pretty, and it is hilarious. I'd never really thought of it that way, but it is just like dust and like looks like garbage scraps.
Yeah, like, what? It makes no sense, but you just mix it and it turns into magic. We'll see if maybe Rick Bonus is going to try to find his own version of onion dip, like onion powder, and just try to sprinkle that into the Winnipeg Jets forward group, mix it around, and see if he can find a combination that works.
Well, you definitely have to have some dip after his latest compressor too this afternoon.
Oh, he had some dip. There was a couple chips full that he had, no doubt about it. Let's get into that game against the Minnesota Wild. Kind of a weird one for me. 6-3 win for the Jets, ultimately. Up 5-1, game over, Minnesota minor charge. And then the Jets ice it with the empty netter. I don't know if you feel this way. And I hate when people say don't critique the wins. Because then, like, why do we even talk about sports?
Yeah.
Like, there's certain situations where I might agree. But you can absolutely critique wins and learn a lot from, you know, not playing your best and getting the result. I did not like the Jets game against Minnesota. And I think they were very, very fortunate to come out of that. I mean, up going into the third period there, I they were pretty handily outplayed by Minnesota, in my opinion, 5-on-5. The one nice thing about that, though, is maybe the power play owes them a game or two like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of nice to have the power play step in, get hot, and maybe against the run of play, pick up a couple big ones for you, and you're able to skate out of there with a win. So, I mean, like, that part of it's good. But as far as the Jets play in that game itself, no, didn't like it. And I think Bones was very adamant about that, too. Like, that was the, sometimes it's easier to go after your team after, like, a quote-unquote bad win. And I think he saw the perfect opportunity to do that post-game. And I mirror his sentiment. It wasn't anything to write home about, despite doubling up the Wild on the score sheet.
Yeah, and also, it's one thing to critique a win when you're on a 6 or 7 game win streak. It's another thing to critique a win when you've just had your worst game of the season, and you're coming off, like, you beat Vancouver, but then you're coming off before that one of your most inconsistent stretches of play. So I think it's more than fair to critique a win. And in a game where they didn't really blow your doors off. And I get it's a back-to-back, so that plays a little bit into it, but it's a back-to-back for Minnesota too.
Yeah.
And I agree with you. I just didn't like, the one thing that really bugs me about the way that the Jets are playing, especially in the O zone, is that there's just no sustainability. It's just all chance. Like, it's
one
great
and
that,
done.
Yeah, it's great that you're getting chances, and they capitalize on a lot of those chances in that game. That's why they came away with the win. But is that sustainable come playoff time? Not necessarily when the games get tighter and it's a harder game to play, tight checking. Like, it's going to be tough to get those chances come playoff time, and that's what we've seen with this team for the past couple of years, and now it's rearing its head again, and I think you have more than a cause for concern.
I think, you know, the kind of combining the Calgary game and the Minnesota game here, and I think Rick Bonus kind of senses it too. Like, this is actual gut check time for the Winnipeg Jets. And I think he's saying the same thing. It's like, who do we want to be, guys? Like, do we can collapse again if you want to do that. You know, you're playing the last two games certainly leads to that being a possibility. Like, do we want to do that, or do we want to be a legitimate contending team? Like, it's up to you. And I think we're going to find out a lot about the Winnipeg Jets. Maybe not in these next two games. You know, fortunately, I mean, and they can make ground against Dallas and Colorado, like we said, Chicago, Arizona, St. Louis on tap next. But Dallas, Carolina back-to-back.
Jeez.
I really think these next five are going to say a lot about what the Winnipeg Jets are going to do in the playoff push and then eventually the postseason here. Because basically Bones did like a mini version of his end of season rant last year. You know, he didn't quite, and I don't think he'll ever go as intense, even though he was correct, like as hard at his players, what he did there, calling them out, soft, all that stuff. But he was kind of towing that line a little bit, right? Saying, like, I mean, the top line, nowhere near good enough. Our play right now, nowhere near good enough. I'm going to be pretty worried about this team. It doesn't have to be 5-1 wins in these next three and then, you know, convincing wins over Dallas, Carolina. But the process has got to be a billion times better 5-on-5 than it has been. Because way too many lapses in coverage and focus. Some effort concerns here and there as well. Execution thrown on top of it. You don't want this to get off the rails. Like, the Jets should be challenging for the division title the rest of the season. Like, that should be the goal here. And I think after these next few games, maybe that Minnesota win not being their best effort might be kind of like finding a diamond in the rough, where it's like, look, we can turn this into a positive here. Let's get our game back on track and do that soon. If they struggle 5-on-5 in these next few, I think it might be panic button time. I'm not going to go there just yet, but Bones has thrown down the gauntlet here, and it's time for the players. And we might get on Bones a little bit later in the episode here, but, you know, a lot of this is on the guys executing out there on the ice, and there are a lot of culprits that just aren't doing it at a high enough level right now.
Yeah, and if anyone's going to know what this team can do and what the bad habits that he's seen happen before, it's going to be Bones. It's about, like, just based off last year. Now, like you said, there are some things that Bones has been doing that maybe contribute to some of this play, but that's for later on. But coming up here, like, this is the perfect time to kind of get on the guys too, right? Like, you have that kind of three-game stretch where you have some pretty easy competition. You build some confidence, especially, like, the last couple of games the Blackhawks have played, they've looked absolutely putrid. Like, they are really, really bad, and so that's the perfect opportunity. And like you said, it doesn't have to be, you know, blow them out 7-0, oh, we're back, baby. Like, it could be a 3-0 win where you just dominate all aspects of the game for a full 60 minutes. And we've seen them been able to do that this year. Like, this team has the ability to completely shut down and dominate a team in a game. We just haven't seen it in a little bit, so it's fresh in our minds that this isn't that, not to expect that play right now. They can totally turn things around here, especially with that extra day off in between too. Not that one game on, one day on, game the next day sort of schedule that they've been having the last little bit. You get an extra day of rest. You come in against Chicago. You don't overthink things. And I think that's part of the problem too, is that some guys, especially Nick Ehlers.
Oh man. I would just say the second line. Well, maybe not Monahan as much.
Yeah.
But man, oh man, Ehlers and Perfetti were just like
really struggling.
They're just in their heads. Yeah. Like, especially Ehlers. Yeah. I mean, that was about as bad of a game. And it was just like the skill part of it. Like, he losing the puck on easy entries. Just, you know, he tries to take a clapper on an easy play. It's kind of bobbles and misses it. 2-on-1 back the other way for a minute. Like, it was.
There was that one power play. I think it was in the early second, but it looked like Space Jam, and someone took all his powers, yeah. And it was just like, I don't know how to play hockey. Like, he was missing guys by like 15 feet. He's just throwing and Bones mentioned that he has been dealing with a little bit of a nagging injury, and maybe that's from before when he was injured for a little bit, but it's just sucks to see, because you know that he has the ability to be that game-breaking talent. He's just not executing right now.
Yeah, and you wonder too, I mean, these guys are human. He's lighting it up on the first line. Connor gets back, you're immediately down to the second line for no good reason, right? Like, I not saying that as a negative towards Ehlers, but like, that does that have anything to do with him struggling as of late? And then you've got Perfetti on the other side of him, who's what, pointless in 10-11 now, hasn't scored in forever. I mean, he's gripping the stick. He's basically praying that anything can go in for him right now. So you've got both guys flanking the new guy that they're just fighting it big time. And Monahan 5-on-5 just hasn't been able to get any traction going. And that second line is still a big question mark as to how you get them going. Thankfully, you know, looks like Monahan, the trade for Monahan might have, I don't want to, you know, knock on wood, might have fixed the power play, because it's sexy right now. It's looking pretty good. But that, yeah, 5-on-5, it's been pretty rough for that second line. And I don't really know what the elixir is for that, other than maybe you just hope a lucky bounce gets Ehlers and Perfetti on the board. They find their game a little bit, some confidence, and then maybe we see the best out of those three moving forward. Now, the first line is also in a bit of a weird spot. They have chemistry together, as proven earlier in the season. They've produced at a decently high rate outside of that blip a week or two ago, and they've been performing extremely well on the score sheet these past few games, especially Vancouver. They were dreadful against Minnesota. Taken to the cleaners. Minnesota's top line right now is humming. So, I mean, give them a little bit of credit, too.
Seven goals a game before. Yeah, combined.
That's pretty good. Pretty good line. But there's a lot more out of Scheifele, Vilardi, and Kyle Connor. And I'll give Bones credit. Didn't like the way that he handled Ehlers and Perfetti. Talking about them a few games ago and their potential reduced ice time. I think a lot of people were on him about that. You know, setting a standard, does that apply to everybody? He called out the top line. Well deserved. And that's got to be the way it is moving forward. If your top guys are at a lower standard than everybody else, your team is doing zippo. But they've got to be held to an even higher standard than everybody else. And I think finally maybe Bones, it was enough is enough here. And it's time to kind of crack the whip a little bit and get those guys going. It's kind of funny too, Tice, because maybe quietly, I don't have a problem with Mark Scheifele's game.
No, I thought he's been really good lately,
like,
and
there's been no real dips. Like there wasn't a great defensive play against Calgary, but he was in the right position. He just didn't finish it there.
Yeah,
but like the effort's there, the battle's there, intensity. Compete level, all that, and he's still producing pretty decently, despite the power play being horrendous. To me, it's the two guys beside him that maybe Rick Bonus is more so saying, let's get a little more here. Like, you guys have a lot more to give at both ends of the ice right now, and you're kind of dragging down the guy in the middle.
Well, yeah, I just wanted to add there, too, that I think Shively's covered up for a lot of their deficiencies in their own end, which is... If you would have said that at the beginning of the year, you'd have like, what do you want?
Is there a new Mark Scheifele you're talking?
But he has, like, he's been fairly responsible. I mean, like you mentioned, that play against Calgary, it looks bad, but like, he really hasn't had those kind of breakdowns that much this year. And if every now and then, it doesn't matter if you're Patrice Bergeron or whoever, the worst player in the NHL, like, you're going to have your lapses, especially if you're the worst player in the NHL. But
probably will. Or maybe you don't. Maybe that's just your baseline is awfulness.
But they need more from those guys. And they can't just be passengers on Scheifele's wing. Like in the Minnesota game, Connor is the recipient of a really nice play by Vilardi and Scheifele to leave that puck. Scheifele leaves that puck,
Yeah. Allows
Connor to kind of have that extra space just to rip that shot. But you need both those guys. And Gabe, I haven't been a huge fan of Gabe Vilardi's games the last couple.
He said that.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Like, you said that, but he's like, I have not been good.
Yeah.
So that's not a revelation to him. I think that's kind of the good, like, I think they're all aware of it.
It's just a funk.
Yeah, it happens. I mean, they're... For the most part, they're aware of it. I wonder about Kyle Connor sometimes. But, yeah, it's just been too long, I guess, is the concern for me. And, I mean, yeah, it was a bad game for the top six. There's just no other way that you can't sugarcoat it. They were dreadful against Minnesota. So we'll see if there's a bounce back in tune for them. I mean, yeah, like you said, perfect opportunity. Chicago will not provide much competition. it's going to be easy pickings there, but it's intriguing too, because unfortunately we both watched Chicago play on Wednesday against Philly. I watched all of it somehow, but if you cheat on them, like if you cheat for offense, the one thing they do well is transition and get the puck in a counterattack going back the other way, especially if Bedard is one of the two players, right? And they could potentially hurt the Jets odd man rush wise. If they're just all offense, if they're thinking all offense here. So keep an eye on that. I don't think that's going to be an issue overall, though. I imagine the Jets kind of cruise to a nice, easy Friday night win. But this would be the perfect opportunity for a Vilardi, for a Connor, Ehlers, Perfetti. Just, like, let's wake up, get a cookie or two, And let's get this right before the competition stiffs up over the next little bit.
Yeah, and even just to add on that, I thought that the Jets actually did a not bad job in transition against the Wild. It's more so when the puck was in their end that they really struggled and got hemmed in their own end. But off the rush, I thought they handled the chances like pretty well for the most part. Calgary, it was a different story, but at least like there's areas in that, there's improvement in those areas. And against a team like Chicago, like you mentioned, like they are... There's some times where there's two guys cherry picking at the red line, and then there's like, hopefully one of these guys chips it out, we got a chance, because that's the only way we're scoring. So you do have to be careful, and it's tough, because you look at the Calgary game and it's so fresh in our minds too that it's like, oh, I really worry about the transition there. But I do think that they'll be able to lock it down, and just play a solid game against Chicago and you'll come away with a win. That's all you have to do.
Yeah, yeah. It's not even to me, it's more so what happens against Arizona.
Yeah.
On Sunday, that'll be kind of the more intriguing part of this. So we'll see what happens. Again, though, not the best effort for the Jets. But, hey, 6-3 wins better than a 6-3 loss. That's what they did against Calgary. So baby steps in the right direction, I guess. Quickly, just one last thing from the Wild game I want to mention. I get two parts, kind of. But one has been kind of playing on my mind over the last little while. Dylan Sandberg's a hell of a player. He's just been... I haven't noticed him have an off game in a long, long time. And it doesn't seem to matter who his partner is, but it'll be a crime if he's not this team's second pair left shot defenseman next year. Unless there's some crazy trade made. But like with the current personnel, Sandberg's got to be LD2, right?
He has to be. He's just... Yeah. He's the perfect fourth D-man. Like, that's kind of just what he is. He's
like not... the defensive foil to a puck mover.
Yeah, he's not... I mean, they don't totally play a similar style, but I could, like, in the mold of, like, an Eric Chernak on the Lightning. A guy who's...
Yeah, I can dig that.
Yeah, like, just a guy who's... He's not going to blow you away, but he's just a steady, steady presence in that top four. And that's what you need, especially with the makeup of some of their defensemen in that top four. It's nice to have that calm, steady presence.
On the flip side of that, and not really a positive, I thought Declan Chisholm looked really good.
Yeah.
Like, really good. Like, for a guy that's just got to a new team, but he's got power play minutes, he skates really well. And he was on the ice for a number of extended chances for the Minnesota Wild. Took a bad penalty in the game, but, oh, that one stings. Like, that one's... Logan Stanley isn't even playing all that bad since he's come back in these last handful of games. But you just wonder where this team could potentially be. Like, imagine having, just say, a Chisholm-Kovacevic pairing. And then, I mean, put aside, Kovacevic is like a second pair D-man right now. And Chisholm looked pretty damn good. But, like, imagine the cap savings on the back end you could have. And then the potential to make big-time additions up front to the deadline here. You know what I mean? Like, it's gone and done with. I'm not going to belabor that point. But it did just suck watching, again, you draft and develop a guy and then let another team reap the rewards.
And you see his work on the power play, and you just think, like, hey, maybe a guy like that could really help out an absolutely anemic second unit all year, where they really have done nothing this whole season on the power play. And that's a big, like, that's something I feel like we don't touch on enough, because the first unit was, you know, so bad for so long, but now that they've figured things out, it's not as much as an issue, obviously. But man, that second unit, really, they don't even provide like momentum. It's just completely standstill. Let's get the first unit back out there, maybe they can generate some chances for us. Like, I just have no hope whenever that second unit comes out now.
Yeah. Well, I think part of it too is Ehlers and Perfetti are in a funk.
Yeah.
No, that's your power play.
Yeah.
It's so you have nothing going there on the set. Yeah, no, totally fair. But good for Chisholm. I mean, he's going to be an NHLer. there's no doubt about that. He's going to be, you know, maybe the ceiling isn't sky high for him, but he's going to be a regular for a long, long time. Keep an eye on what he does with Minnesota as they chase a playoff spot. Just 2 points back of Nashville and St. Louis for that final wildcard spot in the Western Conference. So we'll see if maybe it's a Chisholm revenge tour against the Jets in round one. Who knows?
Oh, my gosh.
Potentially happen. quickly, before we wrap up the episode, Trade talk. Is this correct? Exactly 2 weeks away from the deadline?
Something like that. Depends if you count the leap day.
Is it a leap year?
I believe so.
Yeah. Oh, cool. All right. Well, you have to count.
Working for free on that day.
Yeah, I don't know about that. There's got to be some... Yeah, okay.
You should get an extra day of pay.
I'm going to call HR. I'm going to call HR. They're going to deny me, and that's probably fair. But, I mean, 2 weeks till the deadline. It's creeping closer here. We are starting to hear some new names get into the mix. And there's also a few interesting, I guess, tidbits or notes from other teams across the NHL as we kind of get into crunch time here. Decisions are going to have to be made pretty damn soon for both the Jets and other contending teams. But to me, the most intriguing name that popped up out of nowhere, kind of nowhere, is a guy that I mentioned in my bold predictions. And these two teams are kind of the biggest newsmakers, Tyson, over the last few days. Do you remember my bold prediction?
I'm drawing a blank right now.
I said the Vegas Golden Knights would trade for Pavel Buchnevich.
Oh.
And wouldn't you know it, St. Louis reportedly has him kind of on the block. The ask is high, but they're willing to listen on Buchnevich. And wouldn't you know it, Mark Stone is headed to long-term injury reserve.
But before we talk...
Opening up some cap... Interesting how those two things seem to align up.
Before we talk about the actual trades, this has to stop. This is so crazy.
So, I don't know, was it Cervelli? That's apparently a lacerated spleen for Mark Stone. That might be hard to fake. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, if that's actually the case... Like, okay, that's a pretty, like, I don't think, is a spleen an organ? Maybe? Yeah. Like, a cut organ, okay, that does seem pretty serious, although I did see somebody mention that, like, Jason Witten did that in the NFL and he was back in 2 weeks. So, there's that part of it where it's like, you know, if you do have a lacerated spleen, you can take some time off, but I totally agree that if it ends up happening that Mark Stone is able to battle back and he gets in there just in time. Not quite enough for game 82, but I'm ready to go for game 1 of the playoffs. The NHL needs to eliminate this immediately because it would just be beyond. Like you would almost be at the point where you might have to asterisk it. You know what I mean? Because that's bad. Like to do it last year, he did have back surgery. It's kind of shady, but like whatever. He has he has no back. And he has surgery on it. Okay. But to do it again the next year...
And like, Eichel's out?
And Eichel's out too? Like, that might be... Like, I think at that point you'd have to do an investigation, at the very least if you're the NHL, and then immediately, like, some kind of loophole right after that.
Yeah, because, like, with a lacerated spleen, he probably does have a lacerated spleen. It's probably going to suck for, like, 4 weeks or over a month. But, like, there's no way that he wouldn't be ready for... At least, like, one of the second last or last week of the season. Like, that's such garbage. And they're, like, they have 17 mil in cap space.
Yeah.
How is that fair? They're just, like, it is a complete just joke of a system right now. And I think that there should be something. I saw some suggestions where, you know, maybe if you don't play one of the last 10 games of the year, you're not eligible. For the playoffs?
Yeah, see, it's tough, though, because, like, some guys do get hurt. And then it's like, well, like, Vegas is just kind of ruining it. Vegas and Tampa are kind of ruining it for everybody else.
I wonder if there is a way that you could do it where the amount of cap space that you put on long-term injury reserve ends up carrying over to the next offseason, like a percentage. And it's like...
They might have to do something like that because... It's becoming, you're right, like, it's becoming unfair, a competitive advantage, and against the spirit of the rules.
Yeah.
And so that's, to me, the main issue there. Regardless of that, the ask, apparently, for Buchnevich is 2 firsts. Maybe something else, too, but apparently it's going to start at that. He looked pretty good in Winnipeg, I must say. Like, to, like we touched on, maybe give young Cole Perfetti, you know, reduced responsibilities lower in the lineup, and a Buchnevich Monahan Ehlers line.
And you get,
and he's another year after this, we should say. Two firsts. Going to be a little difficult because the Jets are out of one of those, but...
How about a Habs second and a first?
And then maybe a B-level prospect?
Stanley? Logan Stanley?
Yeah, it's going to have to be more than that. Okay, how about this? How about this? Montreal second, 2025 first, Chaz Lucius.
Yeah.
I think I'd jump all over that, too. He is... People do the underrated player thing. And they'll do, Alex Barkov is underrated as he's an MVP candidate and has won a Selke. Or Jacob Slavin for the 90th year in a row. Yeah. Top 10 in Norris votes. Like, to me, Buchnevich is actually has a case for the most underrated player in the NHL. Because he's very quietly been, at the very least, a point-a-game guy for 3-4 seasons now.
Yeah.
He's a legit difference maker. Young, talented. That's a guy I would be willing to break the bank for.
And he's not. It's not like he's playing on a team with a wealth of talent either. There's some solid players, but I think Buchnevich is the guy that kind of stirs the drink in St. Louis for the most part. Robert Thomas is probably in on that a little bit too.
He's pretty good.
But it's Buch is very... And to think too, like what he originally went for, the Rangers just gave him up. The Rangers just gave him up for nothing. It was Sammy Blais, and Sammy Blais tore his ACL.
Sammy Blais in a second. And Blais did not last very long.
Nope, tore his ACL, and then sucks. That's brutal for him, but like that's, you gave away a point-per-game player for literally nothing, and he's not, and he's on a 5.8, I think it is. Like, that's, even if they end up, like, I could see St. Louis retaining, and then, oh my gosh, you get him at, my math's not great, 2.9?
Yeah, like, I doubt they would retain, though. I mean, just because the return would be so much bigger.
Yeah.
And there's no real reason to, because he's worth more than his cap hit. Yes. So, that would, I mean, I people are like, oh, why would the Blues do that? Well, Doug Armstrong does that all the time when they're in a playoff spot. This is the exact thing they do. So, will be an intriguing one to keep an eye on. I don't know if Winnipeg's going to be in the mix for him necessarily, but... Colorado, I know Colorado's looking maybe more down the middle, but like the Avs are looking for an impact guy behind McKinnon, Rantanen. That would be a little terrifying, and there's some other teams that no doubt would be in the mix for him.
Edmonton.
That's pretty damn good fit in Edmonton, So I wouldn't mind. I'm still on the Jordan Eberle to Winnipeg train, but I wouldn't mind going gourmet shopping for Pavel Buchnevich. So we'll see if the Jets maybe tinker around there and try to find a way to make that work. I could get down with that. Any other trade news that we need to get to?
Well, I think it would be awesome if Erik Karlsson went back to Ottawa.
Right. Elliot Friedman with a sneaky Friedge bomb, basically hinting that the potential is there for Karlsson to Ottawa, reunite with Alfredsson, who's behind the bench there, and I don't even know what that I have no idea what that trade looks like.
Well, David Pagnotta, in his article, like a couple that was released like around like Thursday evening, he said that Josh Norris is available from the Senators for the right price, but he'd only be included for a talent for talent trade. And Josh Norris.
Well, okay, time out. We're not doing Karlsson anymore. What about Perfetti for Norris?
No.
Really?
I'm not doing that.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
I don't like Josh Norris's game that much. And for how... I think he's making $8 million, right? I'm pretty sure he's making $8 million.
Well, 7.95.
Yeah. I am... To me, like... Cole Perfetti will probably be Josh Norris. With the potential that he ends up being even better. And I just, with that much money, like...
I don't know what his, like, no-trade situation is, if he has one. But you'd have a guy locked up for a long time, down the middle.
Injury-prone, though.
A little, yeah. I mean, he's good. Yeah, what? He doesn't have a shoulder, so what?
I'm sticking with Cole. I'm only trading Perfetti for Erasmus Anderson.
Oh, yeah, that whole garbage that we did last week.
That was
it. Anderson and Colvin and Mangiapane and Dustin Wolf for Cole Perfetti. And...
Hey, why not? Get it done. Let's tinker, baby. Let's find a way to get this done. I still think that Cole Perfetti and like a solid prospect and or that Montreal second gets a deal done for Anderson. And then boom, you have a two number one D-men for the next three playoff runs.
I mean, it would, you know, that blue line would look nice. There's no doubt about that. I don't think there's enough scoring in the lineup for Winnipeg.
We'll figure it out.
Yeah, you better figure it out.
We got Rutger and Brad Lambert still in the pipeline. Nikita Chibrikov.
And you wonder too if McGrory's going to be like a kind of like mini deadline ad in a way.
Yeah, I mean he's going to be a gamer. He's a gamer.
Why not get him on? I mean, I'm intrigued. That's something we haven't really touched on either, is just the potential of McGrory to come in. And I mean, worst case, I think he pretty much drives a fourth line.
Imagine though, like, if you put him on Lowry and Nino with Rutger.
I know, that's kind of the intriguing thing.
That's where it's like, oh.
And then you could drop Appleton down to the fourth line where he probably is best suited right now.
Yeah, and that third line all of a sudden like has legitimate scoring potential. They have scoring punch now.
Yeah, I mean, Matty Nyes did that for the Leafs last year. I mean, he was more of a top six guy for them.
Yeah.
Right? So it's not inconceivable that, you know, I don't know, was Nyes a first round pick or like a mid? He wasn't like a high pick.
Yeah, it was either end of first or
yeah,
or
right? So you don't have to be a Cale Makar to come in and make a huge impact, right? Top of the draft. McGrory could come in and be a pretty significant ad for the Jets. So that'd be nice. The other thing, too, quickly, while we wrap this up, with the names that are being mentioned down the middle right now, I won't include Josh Norris because I have my doubts that that's going to happen. But do you think the Jets, as it stands right now, got the best center in Monahan? Because it's Monahan. I mean, moving aside Elias Lindholm. Because, I mean, that already happened before the Jets could make a move, right? So, but Monahan, Henrique, Lawton, am I missing someone else down the middle?
Not without, like, those guys have, like, legitimate smoke behind them. Where it's
Like, we'll do an actual, like, recap once the deadline finishes.
Yeah, as of right now, it's hard to argue. Because with those guys, I mean... Maybe you get a little bit better defensive impact, not necessarily defensive play, because Monahan has been solid. He has had a couple lapses too, but I mean, that's to be expected every now and then. But you might have a little bit more of a physical impact from getting a guy like Lawton and like a chippiness to that game. But none of those guys are producing at the level that Monahan's going to.
That's exactly it. Yeah. Not to mention, I mean, the team's biggest issue was the power play.
Yeah.
He has almost single-handedly come in, and, you know, while it's not just him,
I want
to
ask.
It's hard to ignore the impact.
I want to ask you about that. I'm not trying to take away from Sean Monahan because he is the reason why it is clicking right now. But is that the team getting a new weapon and kind of like let's use this weapon, or is it just has like the scheme just actually changed to now where they're finally clicking at the way that they want to click on the power play?
Yeah, I think, I mean, it seems to me, and we'll wrap it up quick here, but it seems to me like they've wanted to include the bumper a little bit more in terms of puck movement and things like that. There's a lot of times just these short passes between him and Scheifele.
Yeah.
Moves around the ice a lot more. It just seems like for whatever reason, they've put like an emphasis, I think, on the bumper spot, which Monahan obviously now incorporates. And I think, too, there's that portion of it where Monahan knows how to play that spot, and he's been very good, and it's impacted the rest of the guys. But I think, too, it's allowed Vilardi to just solely be net front. And he is as good as it gets in the NHL in and around the net. Some of the plays he makes in tight with his hands is absurd. So it's kind of like a waterfall effect where, you know, like Monahan comes in, takes that spot, great. But then it allows the other guys to be better in their spots as well.
Yeah, and I guess that kind of just shows the, I guess, jamming a square peg into a round hole. with I Follow, right?
Like, oh, where it's,
he just doesn't have that. I don't want to say the IQ, but just the instincts on offense.
He doesn't have the skill. Yeah. No. There's no doubt about that. So I mean that. Yeah, they acquired him for a reason, and so far that reason has borne out quite nicely. But we'll revisit that once the deadline officially passes to see if, you know what, maybe for those that doubted, Chevy did as good as he could have done after all. Coming sooner than we think. 2 weeks to go, according to Tyson. So we'll get ready for that. We head into the stretch run here. Feb's almost done, which means March is right around the corner. And we're excited to get into the stretch run and the trade deadline almost getting here as well. But that'll do it for the episode here. We'll cap it off there. Thank you guys so much for tuning in once again to another edition of Skates and Plates on the Hockey Podcast Network. I'm your host, Brandon Rewicki, CJOB's Tyson Rewicki with us once again. We're back at it on Tuesday morning, breaking down the weekend for the Jets. Matchups against Chicago and then Arizona before they take on the St. Louis Blues. So we'll get into that and any other trade talk around the NHL that takes place until then. But until Tuesday morning, have a great weekend. Even though it's not long, make it long in spirit. Have a great one. We'll talk to you guys on Tuesday morning. Enjoy the weekend, everybody. Peace.